This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is Countdown by Beyonce as I begin my annual countdown of the Grizzlies roster. Ranking them from a future-oriented perspective as we move into the offseason.
The piece is up at the Daily Memphian. I'll talk about that in a moment. Before I do, the Redbirds are renaming themselves for two games, the Barbecue Nachos. And you've lived here. You lived in the South, the Mid-South, longer than I did. So there's some debate about when Barbecue Nachos, and I know you're not a massive fan of Barbecue Nachos, when they became a thing. Do you recall when you first became aware that Barbecue Nachos existed?
I feel like it was Redbirds. It was sort of in conjunction with the Redbirds downtown. I certainly don't remember eating Barbecue Nachos like, growing up in Memphis or as a teen in Memphis. No, that was not part of like the barbecue lexicon at that point, that being, the late 80s, early 90s. And so I feel like it associated more with like the Redbirds as a ballpark food initially.
Yeah, I think that's certainly when it exploded. There's some questions of the origin. Okay. In terms of the NBA last night, I recognize that Oklahoma City team.
Yeah, no, that looks familiar. I kept waiting. I finally went to bed. I really wanted to see if it would get to 50.
Right.
And so, it got to 48, I think, at the end of the third quarter. I was like, this is great. Oklahoma City's going to get the first possession. They make a shot. It hits 50. I'll go to bed. And then they turned it over, and Peyton Watson went down the floor, got a dunk. I was like, this is not going to happen. So I went to bed. And truly enough, it didn't. But I think it got up to 49 at one point.
Yeah, it was, and it was all the same. It was all what we recognize, It was 20 forcing 21 turnovers, and let's see, there was a 30 to 9 run, became 30 to 11, 45 to 21. So there you go. It's weird though. This is what you might have expected in game one, just like the Grizzlies, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, Oklahoma City was so primed for that game one to start their playoff run, and I can't remember whether the Nuggets had the same kind of turnaround as the Grizzlies did from the end of their series to game one.
Two days. Yeah.
And so, you never know. I don't think game one for the Nuggets was quite the schedule loss that it was for the Grizzlies.
Right.
But it does show, the Thunder, when everything starts clicking for them, they have a level that other teams don't have. They had it all during the regular season, and they showed it last night. And I didn't think, I thought the Thunder would be a little bit more susceptible in the second round than maybe I had thought before the Grizzlies series started. I didn't think the Nuggets, and maybe the Clippers wouldn't have either, but I didn't think the Nuggets had the ball handling depth, athleticism and ball handling depth to deal with that defense, we'll see. They got the game one win. They got the split they needed, but I don't think they've got enough to win four games against the Thunder.
Okay, do the Knicks have enough to win four games against the Celts after doing it again?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, when you asked me that question the other day about the three series, I mean, the Knicks was my answer, and it was not – something I had a lot of conviction about necessarily, but it was more process of elimination. I thought the top to bottom roster talent gap was bigger between the Nuggets and the Thunder and between the Pacers and the Cavs. Although, once you start taking guys off the Cavs roster, that changes that. I thought the talent differential was much closer with Knicks Celtics than in the other series. And the Knicks got some real gamers on, and we saw it in the playoffs last year. Now they ended up getting worn down and injuries, and they ran out of gas. But they had guys who stepped up in the postseason last year. Jalen Brunson fronted the list, but other guys too. And I don't know that the talent gap is that big between the Knicks and the Celtics.
How many firsts do you think the Grizzlies offered for Mikal Bridges?
It was like four or something, three or four. I don't know. Yeah. A lot.
Would have been worth it. Just another massive defensive play he makes. And we have Jason Tatum, who yesterday we were discussing his superstar status and did not look it again last night.
Yeah, he's a really good player, but he's as good as you can be without being the tippy-top upper crust guy, and that's sort of always been the story with Jason Tatum. Like, it's a bad thing to be the fifth best player in the world or something,
Right.
But he was not good. The Knicks, it's funny, the Knicks, got swept by the Celtics in the regular season, but they went out and got Bridges and then got Ananobi, maybe Ananobi and then Bridges, whatever order it was, with the idea that they were trying to build a team in part that would match up with the Celtics in playoff basketball. And while it didn't look good in the regular season, it looks good right now. They do have the athleticism and size along the perimeter when you have Ananobi and Bridges and Josh Hart. They got three of these dudes. Like, a lot of teams are trying to find one of these dudes, like Memphis. They got three of these dudes, like these gritty, gritty perimeter defensive guys with size.
Yeah, and it'll be fascinating now that it goes to New York. I'm tempted to look and see if I can see the prices on the secondary market of Madison Square Garden for Game 3. But certainly shapes up a lot of fun. We learned Steph is out for at least a week, and so we shall see as happen. But I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get to your piece that you have up where you count down the Grizzlies players. People can read it. I won't go over all of it. Tell the people again what the conceit here is. How are you ranking them?
It's about value to the franchise going forward. And so it's not just ranking the players in terms of the best players if you play a game tonight. So you're factoring in the contract situation, you're factoring in age, you're factoring in, potential to get better, you're factoring in injury issues, you're factoring in, all things considered. And you can think about it in terms of an expansion draft, like, do you want to protect an expansion draft? It's not exactly that, because I'm including free agents, and free agents are not part of that consideration for an expansion draft. And so I factor that into, like, the likelihood of a guy is going to be back or it's going to be used in a trade, is the value of whatever rights you have as a free agent, how much is that valuable to you as a franchise? But it's basically that.
All right, let's pick off just a few of them, and people can read the rest of them when they read the piece. Let's start with number 18, Yuki. What's Yuki's status? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's a free agent. He can be a restricted free agent if the Grizzlies give him some kind of qualifying offer, which I think is just another two-way deal, although I'm not dead certain about that. Yuki is, there's three guys coming out of the season who are not on the main roster, who were on two ways. And of those three, Yuki's the only one who really is not a candidate to ever be on the main roster. And so that makes him an easy 18. He has not been on the main roster. He's not going to be on the main roster. And so he's really, he was a fun guy to have on a two-way contract. And he and the Grizzlies will both have to make a mutual determination on whether it's worth, playing that song again next season.
But it would be just to bring it back for another year, just like this past year, basically,
yeah.
Yuki Mania, maybe year two. And it seems unlikely. I mean, that is a useful spot, right? That you can have a player there who can develop into an NBA player for you, and he will not.
That they've been doing that maybe as much as anybody in the league. I mean, you can go all the way back to Killian Tilly or John Conchar. Go all the way back to John Conchar. I mean, there's been more than half a dozen guys they've brought through that path to put them on the main roster. Some work out, some don't. Like Killian Tilly didn't work out. It was short-lived. The kid of Lofton thing ended up being short-lived. But like, you know, Conchar and Scottie Pippen and Vince Williams and like lots of guys. And so, and I think they're going to do that this summer, you know, to get ahead of it a little bit with Cam Spencer, but they're not going to do that with Yuki.
Okay. So Yuki's 18. Lamar Stevens is 17. We'll skip him. Luke Kennard is 16. We've talked about him extensively. John Conchar, 15. It's kind of amazing. 2 years left at $6.2 million.
So I had Conchar last on the list a year ago, and I could put him last again. Like, you'd argue to put him last because if you're talking about positive to negative value,
right?
Like, guys who are just free agents are sort of, by definition, sort of neutral, right? Like, there's no real value there either way necessarily. Conchar is negative value. He's the most negative value contract on the roster, but I think he really showed that he's still a useful player. The novelty's worn off. The contract is probably double the size you'd like it to be. But, like, he's a real basketball player. He can really help the team. And I think he got a little bit of new life maybe with the coaching change because, like, maybe the novelty hadn't worn off as much as Isolo, and he's able to just see, like, what he could provide, which was rebounding and hustle play that was useful relative to the other options. And so, like, Conchar's a guy who might get moved if they need to free up salary space or if it helps in a contract match. But he is a useful basketball player.
Yeah, the sentence, again, people can read the whole thing. It's deeper than what I'm getting into here. But you write, if the Grizzlies want or need to clear salary space this summer, paying a cap space team to take Conchar is likely the first option. What would one pay to get rid of John Conchar?
I mean, you would incentivize with a second round pick or two, and then you probably pay some cash to offset some of the actual money.
I see.
You know, because you can include cash in trades too.
Right.
It's not cap money; it's just real money. But so they would take the cap hit, but you would help them pay some of it. That's the kind of thing that happens. You can see happening. I mean, it's basically, I don't think there was any cash involved, but basically they did that with Zaire Williams last summer, where they attached a second round pick to move some contract.
All right, number 14 is Zion Pullen. Tell me about him.
So, I mean, he never really played. I don't think he logged. I didn't even look. He may have logged a few minutes here and there on the main roster. I mean, he logged no non-garbage time with the Memphis Grizzlies this season. But the Grizzlies, he was an undrafted free agent. He ended up playing at Florida, like all these guys. He played to like 17 different colleges because that's what they do now. But he was at Florida the year before last. He was all SEC first team guard out of Florida. Went undrafted, was just in the G League, playing for a G League team, but not on a two-way contract with anyone else. The Grizzlies liked what they saw. They signed him to a two-way, moved him onto the Memphis Hustle. And he's like the new project, and we'll see if it goes anywhere. And so I think they like him. I think he's going to be on the Summer League team, and they're going to take a good look at him in Summer League. And if they like what they see, he'll probably be back on the Grizzlies on a two-way again next season, most likely.
But he could really be the third point guard. Like they needed another ball handler at various times this year.
Yeah. Do they want to carry a third point guard on the 15-man roster? Or do they think that Pullen or someone like that could sort of provide that off of the G League roster? And so he is sort of like, you know, the new Pippen in some ways. I don't think he's proven as much. I think he is less likely to graduate to the main roster this coming season, but I think there's a good chance if he has a good summer league, he's on the two-way contract going into next season with the idea of he is someone on the two-way who could log minutes for the Grizzlies.
Bagley and Huff are 13 and 12. Thoughts?
Well, Huff's under contract and Bagley's not. Huff's on a good contract. Bagley's on no contract. I think if you just, you know, if you stripped away all that, you told the Grizzlies, all right, it's going to be $3 million next season for either one. Pick one, the one you want on your roster. I think they'd probably take Bagley. But Huff's the guy under the contract right now, and he's a good value on that deal as a third center. I think he is less of a fit in the way that Isolo is going to try to play than he was early this season when they were doing, you know, more of the spacing kind of system. I think Bagley's a better fit for the way they want to play, and it's a nice sort of lob target for Morant. But Bagley's a free agent. You have more important stuff you deal with first. So I'll be interested to see the end game. I can see Huff back on this contract and Bagley elsewhere. That's the path of least resistance for both. I can see Bagley on the Grizzlies roster on a smaller contract. I can see Huff getting traded, you know, to just to clear a roster spot. So I think it could really go either way with either of those guys.
Cam Spencer.
Yeah, obviously they like Cam Spencer. You know, Kleiman volunteered his name at the close of media session. He's got a lot of good qualities. He's got some pretty hard ceiling issues in terms of his size athleticism. But I think they're going to find a way to get him onto the main roster on a cheap contract and move forward and see if he can help them. I think it's not a deal you do early in the summer, because the kind of deal you end up doing is really contingent on other things. And this is more of a, like a, you know, housekeeping at the end of the summer kind of deal. But I think he'll be back on a main roster. I think he probably knows that one way or another.
And then finally, wrapping up the first nine, we've got Gigi Jackson at number 10 on the list.
Yeah, I mean, Gigi said it's a weird thing to be at a professional crossroads when you're not even legal drinking age. That's kind of where Gigi is. And so, you know, I think given the contract he's on and given the kind of season he had, there's more value. There's more potential value for Gigi Jackson as a player than as a trade commodity.
Right.
And so I think the best thing for all parties involved is to just have a reset this summer and try to, like, you know, just, you know, come back with fresh eyes and like, you know, take a breath and start all over again and try to get him back on track, because he is a very talented player.
It's funny. It was discouraging in some ways, because obviously he was hurt. But then when he comes back, we didn't see any progress in feel and certainly in his defense, whatever. And then we also saw some pouting. You know, there wasn't a lot of progress, yeah. And then it was pouting along with it.
The injury thing did not, unlike Vince Williams, who I guess that we know he'll be on the next one tomorrow. Unlike Vince Williams, I don't think Gigi's play was impacted by his injury after he came back. I think the injury particularly cost him some training camp. He could have used, you know, more time in training camp and to sort of establish himself a little bit more in some kind of role going into the season. So I think the injury hurt him in the sense of the absence. I don't think it had any impact on his ability once he got back. And, I think he had an outsized sense of what he was going to be for the team this season and did not, you know, I think did not maybe attack his return in quite the way he needed to. And I think there was some sense by the end of the season that he had to sort of come to that realization. And I think that lends some hope that he's going to turn it around this summer.
All right. You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian as Chris counts down the Grizzlies roster. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Let's see. We're going to play Right or Than Right trivia, Jeffrey, aren't we? We're going to play Right or Than Right trivia. Only we got right, but we don't have, sadly, we don't have Kevin Cerrito. And so what this means is that I have been forced to come up with the questions, which makes it which is great for the audience, but less good for Jeffrey Wright. We will take. We'll take caller number 2-445-0929. What's the prize again? Tell people what the prize is.
Jeff, so again, it's two tickets to see Killswitch Engage Minglewood Hall May 11th. You also, in addition to those two tickets, win two meet and greet passes to meet the band.
So compete if you like Killswitch Engage, ladies and gentlemen, because you're going to meet the band. Again, the phone number is 445-0929, 445-0929. It is caller number 2. I'll be asking the questions. You either got to be righter than right, or you got to play honorably. Before then, I will tell you that Mother's Day is bearing down upon us. And whatever kind of mom you're celebrating, whether it's your mom or a stepmom or a grandmom or your pet's mom or whoever it is, get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers and get some diamonds. I was kind of stunned, honestly. Two carat lab-grown diamond stud earrings, $7.99 is all. I was, while supplies last, I got those for Claire for Christmas, and she said they were too big. She said they were too big, too glittery, too stunning. And so we got slightly more modest ones, but like that's how brilliant they are for a mere $7.99. The To the Moon gift set, that includes a To the Moon and Back diamond pendant and 24 karat gold dip rose, that's only $1.99. The diamond paw necklace, that's only 119. That's perfect for your pet's mom. And they got a whole lot of other things. Diamonds there. Stunning diamond collection at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Plus free financing, 12 months 0% interest, or take up to 60 months to pay. They got five locations. I go to the one across from Novel and Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers. Bigger, brighter diamonds. Better prices. Online at rijewelers.com. Back in a moment, the Rider Night Trivia is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Sadly, we don't have the impresario of fun games here with us today. We just got me. I'm nothing. I'm none of those things. I'm not the czar of fun. I'm nothing. I got, it's just me. Because Kevin Cerrito could not be here today. But we do have Righter Than Right Trivia, and we're going to muddle along as best we can. Jeffrey, do we have a contestant?
Jeff, we do. We welcome Eric, who's driving on the interstate, to the program.
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
All right. You know how this goes. Do you know how this goes? So I'm going to ask you, you and Jeffrey questions. You get one steal. If your competitor misses the question, you can steal, but only one time. We have four rounds. I'll give you a choice, either A or B, Eric. And then
a bonus round.
And then we get a bonus round where you can wager the points that you've earned. All right. You ready?
Let's go.
All right. The theme today, by the way, is May 8th. Today is May 8th. So all of the questions have to do with May 8th. Do you want A or B in this first question, Eric?
Let's go A.
A. Okay. In 1541, this Spanish explorer saw the Mississippi River for the first time. In 1541, this Spanish explorer saw the Mississippi River on May 8th for the first time. Who was it?
I'm going to go with DeSoto.
That's a correct answer. DeSoto is the correct answer. Jeffrey, in 1821, the Greeks won the Battle of Grava Inn in the War of Independence, okay? Massive battle in their War of Independence in 1821. Who did they beat?
They beat the Turks.
My God, he got it. They beat the Turks. That's exactly right. All right, we're off to a strong start from both of you. Do you want A or B, Eric?
Let's go with A again.
Okay, A. A pharmacist named John Pemberton, on this date, sold a carbonated beverage, Coca-Cola, for the first time, okay? He sold it as a patent medicine. What I need you to do is, within 5 years either direction, tell me what year on May 8th he did that. He sold the first Coca-Cola, a pharmacist, John Pemberton. What year was that? Within 5 years either way.
Let's try 1912.
That is incorrect. Jeffrey, you want to steal?
Yeah, I'm going to steal.
Jeffrey's going to steal.
All right, I got 5 years either way, right?
You got 5 years either way.
All right, I'm going to say 1890.
Got it. He nailed it, just barely. 1886 is when he sold the first Coke on May 8th. And now we go to Jeffrey. He can take control at this point. Jeffrey, in 1970, the Beatles released Let It Be. It was their final album. But what number album was it? One either way.
12.
My God, he nailed that one, too. 3-1. Would you have gotten that, Eric?
No.
No,
absolutely
okay.
Not.
That's good. I feel better about that, then. Okay. You want A or B, Eric?
Oh, let's go with B this time.
B. Okay. On 1884 is the birthday, May 8th, 1884, of the 33rd president of the United States, who said, had a sign on his desk that said, "The buck stops here." Who was it?
That would be Truman.
Truman's the correct answer. Truman's the correct answer. It's 3-2. This was the easiest round, Jeffrey, and yours will be correspondingly easy. Well, I don't want to prejudge.
Know.
In 1984, on May 8th, the USSR announced the boycott of the Olympic Games in this city?
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, exactly. 4-2.
Make sure
everybody got on the board. Okay, this is a question from the 1970s. Well, sort of. These questions remind me of my youth. Do you want A or B, Eric?
Let's go with B again.
B again. Okay. May 8th, 1940, was the birthday of, you recall, Captain and Tennille, the band Captain and Tennille.
Yes.
Well, Tennille was born on May 8th, 1940. What was Tennille's first name?
Tony, T-O-N-I.
Tony is correct. 4-3. All right, Jeffrey. Also born the very same day, on May 8th, 1940, Peter Benchley, who wrote a book that became a rockin' best-selling movie. What was that movie and book in the 1970s? Peter Benchley wrote a book that became the basis of a wildly popular movie in the 1970s. Peter Benchley.
I think it's Jaws.
Jaws is a correct answer.
It is.
Yeah. What are we up to? 5-3?
5-3, but
5-3.
He still has a steal.
But he still has a steal. Okay, so this last question is going to be a break. It's going to be a sports question. Do you want A or B?
Wait, are we in the final round?
Are we in the final round? Oh, yeah, we know how.
So we have to wager.
Oh, you got a wager. I'm sorry. This is what happens when I got multiple jobs. Well, let me see how many Jeffrey's wagering. Okay, go ahead. Eric, how many are you wagering?
All three.
Jeffrey's wagering 2. You want A or B?
Let's go with A.
A. Okay, 1951, May 8th, 1951, is the birthday of a Phoenix Suns coach who became known for his offense 7 seconds or less.
Mike D'Antoni
is correct.
Well played.
6-5, Jeffrey. 1957 is the birthday. May 8th, 1957 is the birthday of this Steelers coach. 15 seasons, 1 Super Bowl win in 2006.
57 has to be Bill Cowher.
Bill Cowher is correct.
What a game.
Back and forth we go. May 8th. Someday they're going to sing, and May 8th is the day when one of the great Right of the Right trivias was ever played.
That was
back and forth they went. Eric, thanks for playing. Jeff, you think he played
out? Absolutely did.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Jeffy, I had a couple other questions I didn't use. Here you go. Ready? Here's some other May 8th questions. These are the ones I didn't use for various reasons. Let's just see. May 8th, 1846, American forces led by this general, who went on to become a president, name is Old Rough and Ready, defeated Mexico in the first major battle of the Mexican-American War.
That would be Zachary Taylor.
Nailed it! I thought that might be too hard for some, but not too hard for you, very clearly. And May 8th, 19...
Also, I believe that's the campaign, I think.
The campaign.
Also,
he's going to tell us about the Zachary Taylor's campaign.
That's the campaign that Ulysses S. Grant got deep sixed.
Yeah, is that right? He got fired?
I'm pretty sure Taylor fired.
Well, Zachary Taylor may have been rough and ready. Only was president for 16 months, and he died of stomach disease. I think, though, weirdly enough, I think it said he was only the fourth shortest term. There were three with shorter terms. How is that even possible? So, Garfield, maybe? Who died of the cold? Harrison. Harrison. I think Harrison is
the
one who...
Didn't McKinley only make it a few months?
Did he? Anyway. Okay, here was the last May 8th question. May 8th, 1980, the World Health Organization announced the eradication of this disease.
So the 80s.
1980, the World Health. I thought those were comparably difficult.
Yeah.
Zachary Taylor and this one. World Health Organization announced the eradication of this disease in 1980.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is good. You're going to end up with a mess. That'd be good. I mean, another triumphant performance.
theoretically.
The chicken pox, I don't believe, has been eradicated. I think people still have that today.
Measles and it's back, maybe?
No, smallpox.
Okay.
Smallpox. But that's very impressive. Very impressive. But we got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. It's fun day radio. Fun day radio. Jeffrey, I do think we have to return. Well, there's a couple stories. Well, one story we haven't gotten into, and I lamented that it's taken me this long to get to this story, is you've got your first bison goring of the season at Yellowstone.
I just hate to see it. It's a day no one looks forward to.
And so a gentleman got, you'll be shocked to hear, too close to the bison.
Yeah.
They recommend, how far do you think they recommend, Jeffrey?
6 feet? What is it? What's social distancing?
From a bison. The bison won't cooperate and put on the little masks either. So you got to be further than 6 feet.
I mean, they move pretty quickly,
they
too.
They're fast.
I don't know.
I was cycling in Shelby Farms recently. I have fresh appreciation for the bison there. Hanging out in the little forest there. It's just
especially
magnificent.
If they're like Memphis Heat in the
they're
summer.
Just right there. I like the bison. Anyway, what do we say? They recommend
100 yards?
No, 25 yards.
Okay.
Would it seem closer to that? Yeah, I would want to be.
They move quicker than...
If there's no fence between you.
Yeah.
If there's a car, if I'm in my car, I could be 25 yards.
I can safely say I have no idea how I'm going to go, but I do know it's not going to be by a bison goring in Yellowstone.
If 47-year-old man got too close, he wasn't badly hurt, evidently, but he was gored. Where is he from? From what state?
What state? Utah.
Florida.
That seemed free space to me,
Jeffrey. I'm kind of disappointed. You're reveling in your victory, you know, whatever. Okay. And then I need to return to the story. The Memphis Redbirds will take on their new identity, the barbecue nachos. They will be the 16th and the 17th. I think this is fabulous. They have a new logo for their hat. I saw some who thought the barbecue could have been more defined. It looks more liquid. Someone suggested it looks more like poo nachos. I don't think that's true at all. I think it looks like barbecue nachos on the logo. And honestly, I like what they're wearing on their jersey, you know? Don't you like that? It says, world famous Memphis barbecue nachos established 2000. Now, again, I think that's a lie. I don't think they were established 2000. I think people ate barbecue nachos here before 2000. And I think there's a little bit of a controversy over when they started. We've already heard, Jeffrey.
Jeff, I've got a special guest for us to help settle the controversy.
Who do we have?
We have Walker Taylor of the Germantown
commissary
to give us some knowledge and history.
Walker Taylor's going to be on with us. Walker, how are you, sir?
Guys, I'm doing great. Loved your piece on Will Hudgens.
Oh,
he's a champ.
He is a champ, isn't he? He's just great.
Yes,
I loved having him on. So, do you stake a claim to inventing barbecue nachos at the commissary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But not me, okay?
Okay.
They were invented by a lady that worked for me. She's deceased now. Her name was Rosie Maben.
Okay.
Sweet lady. Worked for me for a long time. And then I bought the commissary in 1981 and turned it into a barbecue restaurant.
Okay. What was it before?
It was a little grocery store that my dad owned from 1973 to 1981.
Okay.
I bought him out in 8 of 1981.
All right. So then what happened?
Well, spring of 1982 rolled around, and they have an outfit called the West Tennessee Hunter Jumper Association.
Yeah.
Jumper horses. And they have these little club shows. Well, back in those days, you know, I'd have gone to a dog bone section contest to sell barbecue, anything to help pay my bank note.
Uh-huh.
Well, we were doing the concessions up there, and, you know, we were just doing typical hamburgers, barbecue, hot dogs, nachos. And Rosie and I were in there this particular Saturday afternoon, and, I mean, I even remember the customer that bought them first, who's a famous, famous ophthalmologist here in town. Oh, God darn it.
That's all right.
Anyway.
So wait, but what occurred to you all to Rosie to put this thing together?
It was Rosie.
Yeah, what?
She's standing back there, and she's eating some nachos, and she's got some chopped barbecue pork on top of them. I didn't notice anything about it. and Dr. Charles, Dr. Steve Charles.
Uh-huh.
And Dr. Charles goes, "What's that on those nachos?" And I said, "Rosie, what you got on there?" And she looked at me and she goes, "Barbecue, fool."
And what year,
and I said,
what year was this?
This was spring of 82.
Okay.
Probably April of 82. I mean, I remember it like it was tomorrow.
So she wasn't serving them. She was just eating it herself. And the doctor actually had a role in this, a hand in this then. And
totally.
Yeah.
Well, he's the first one that ever bought them because he goes, "Let me have some of mine. How much more will that cost?" I said, "How about a dollar?" And he went, "Cool." And we took them down to the restaurant then in 82. We just had the one side, and we started selling them then. Now I can go further.
Uh-huh.
And I've known Ernie since he was a little kid. I was best friend still to this day with his sister, okay?
Yeah.
In 82, Ernie was at Ole Miss, okay? He was in college.
Yeah.
And so, over the years, through the 90s, Ernie was telling people how he had invented barbecue nachos, and I go, "No, we didn't." And I didn't either. Rosie did, and that's what really, I mean, I would have been mad had I invented them, but I'm not going to claim I did. Rosie invented them. So I believe, Jeff, it was about 09, Jennifer Biggs wrote an article in the Playbook. You remember the Playbook on Friday?
Yeah, uh-huh.
The week before the barbecue, the weekend of the barbecue contest.
Yeah.
So she writes this article about what we do with barbecue other than slapping on a bun and throw coleslaw and sauce on it. So they interviewed, you know, a couple of great places, a Cozy Corner in their hens. Eric down at barbecue shop.
Uh-huh.
With his barbecue spaghetti.
Yeah.
And they went because in 98, I guess, Ernie ran the concessions at Tim McCarver.
Exactly.
I thought for 1 year, but as I understand it, 2 years. The guy from the Daily Memphian thought he did it for two. Anyway, Ernie calls me one day in 98 and goes, "Hey, I want to sell barbecue nachos. Can you teach me how to make them?" Sure.
Wow.
I didn't care. It's chips, cheese, meat, sauce, jalapenos. You know, I imagine you can get that down pat. And
that's
I
great.
I said the trick is buy good cheese. Don't buy that old yellow stuff that tastes like caulk. He started selling them at Redbird Stadium. And then when they moved to AutoZone, the Rendezvous got the barbecue contract.
Right, exactly.
And the media jumped all over it. One, because it's a Rendezvous, and boy, here's new Redbird Stadium, and boy, look at
that. Yeah, the ballpark was such big news then, and they were a phenomenon.
Right.
Like, I worked in the stand. I did a whole shtick where I worked one day in that barbecue nachos stand and wrote about it. Yeah.
I was at the Cardinal game that night.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So anyway, they, you know, the Memphis press and everybody jumped on the nachos, even though we'd been selling them at that time. That was, what, 2000? We'd been selling them for 18 years. Well, anyway, you know, they're a great seller in my restaurant forever. Well, anyway, Jennifer writes this article on 09 about what we did with barbecue. Well, they go to Ernie. She only knew because the Rendezvous had sold them. I mean, we didn't. This isn't the day when Capel used to be the food critic. And so, anyway, and she's just taken over. Well, she mentions Ernie is venting barbecue nachos. And that was on a Friday. Well, a buddy of mine saw it. He goes, "Man, when are you going to get this story straight? Rosie and y'all invented those things, and it's not fair to Rosie." I said, "It's not." Well, I called Ernie that day. And when I called him, because like I said, you know, we're friends, but kind of. And he answered the phone, "Corky's Barbecue." I said, "Yeah, Corky's my A-double-S." I said, and I told him, I said, "Ernie, you know what? You live a lie, you'll get burned by it. And you're going to get burned by this. I'm telling you, somebody's going to say, no, no." Well, fast forward to Monday morning, I get a call from Jennifer Biggs, and she goes, "Let me ask you a question." I said, "Sure, Jennifer. Who invented barbecue nachos?" And I said, "Well, I'll give you two answers. One, I'll tell you who didn't, and that's Ernie.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell you who did. It was Rosie at the commissary, okay?" And she told me, and God rest her soul, I loved her. She goes, "You know what? That really chaps my you-know-what, because, you know, it's one thing, and Jeff, you know, you guys don't like to be lied to." and be made, which no one likes to be lied to. And she goes, man, she was hot. I said, well, how did this come about? She goes, my blog and my, I guess the blogs and emails blew up from people that were eating them in 1980. They were going, we were eating them in 83, 84 at the commissary. They didn't invent those things.
There you go.
Now,
how many do you sell now? Go. You give them credit. Yeah.
I will give them credit for being the first to sell them at the Redbirds.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's what he needs to claim. But I am a.
How many do you sell now? Are they still wildly popular?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. It is, you know, other than probably a barbecue sandwich, a barbecue plate, it's right there, number three.
And how's your new place doing? New, is it
it's
still
doing
new?
Great.
Is it still it's new? Does it great. Count as still new? It's probably been years now. Time flies.
It's going on 6 years, believe
me.
Six
that's
and
incredible.
A half years.
Thank you, Walker. You're nice. My show ends, so I got to wrap this up. Thanks for setting the record straight.
Keep it up.
Yeah, thanks. There you go. We got
to the bottom of it.
Shots fired. So we appreciate that. This whole show went in a direction that I didn't necessarily
expect. Nobody saw this coming.
But I appreciate everyone joining us. Jeffy, what's coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Drew Hill joins their program today. Eric Hasseltine and Jason Smith will join DeMichael Cole and I today on Jeffrey Wright & Company. It's Thursday, so that means Jeff will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. For now, work is done.